There has been an awakening. Those were the first words that we heard from this Star Wars film that just came out in theaters. And we're going to be talking about the theme of awakening. What has awoken? Who has awoken? It's going to be a great episode, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about it right now.
Falcon flight with destiny.
I told you, not a scratch. Oh, if only Lando could have followed instructions. The Falcon's gotten a lot more than a scratch, even while it does fly with destiny. Hey, everybody, it's Riley Blanton from the Star Wars Report podcast. You've tuned into episode 205. Let's do it. So glad that you've decided to tune in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, please delete, as you consider appropriate based upon which time you're listening to this very program. We've got a fantastic show for you today. And it's been a fascinating month of shows, many of which were pre-recorded because we've been busy in January with a lot of plans. So as this episode airs, I better have done a lot of amazing stuff that all of my New Year's resolutions and goals are going to be. But yes, I am Riley, the host of this podcast, and I'd like to bring in to the program to talk with us, as always, my good buddy and yours, it's Mr. Mark Herleman.
Yeah, you know, I had to drive the Falcon hard and park it rusty.
Not unlike Ray.
But I did it with care.
Unlike Ray.
Yeah. I mean, she played hard.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's how you doing, man?
Doing phenomenal. Just had my first day at the movie theater working there now. Discovered that they've upgraded their 3D to real D, so I'm going to have to take my dad over there instead of waiting to go to the town 37 miles away. So that's exciting.
Get ready for disappointment. I'm the one who's been in our many off-air conversations about it. I'm like, dude, you know he's been reading the blogs and he's focusing on the negative. It's not going to be a good experience. Just avoid the heartache. Avoid. If there's one thing I'm good at, it's avoiding conflict.
I've been doomed since the moment he said he read those blogs. My jaw, I think, literally hit the floor. I'm like, why would you do that? You know what I do with blogging. You know what I'm telling you about people and their opinions about this film. Why would you click the link?
Well, what's the funny thing is just point him to Rotten Tomatoes and say that everybody else is crazy, because the thing is at 94% with the critics, like 90-something percent with the audience. It's a hit. By any box office or critical measure, it's a hit. So take that, critics. But I'd like to also bring into the show tonight for our discussions my sister. So you have a sister. I think that's exactly how he says it. It's Bethany Blanton,
like
everybody.
Hey, everybody. I think, Riley, you've seen the Jungle Book trailer one too many times, and you're trying to imitate Ka.
Oh, yeah. And trust in me.
Exactly. Wow, your phone's really going off there.
I just noticed that my phone is not on silent, so it's really buzzing a lot.
That's called the reactions to tweeting out that we are live.
Oh, wow. There we go. Welcome to everybody who's joining us in the live chat. Folks, you're getting a special early preview of this show, which won't be in the podcast feed for a few weeks. But yeah, to everybody in the podcast world as well, thanks so much for tuning in. Like I said, we're going to be talking about a specific theme that I've been thinking a lot about with The Force Awakens that we really haven't had a chance to cover in the kind of depth, detail, and intellectual exploration that you deserve. And we're here. What is the Dark Knight quote? We may not be the podcast Force Awakens reaction you want, but we're the podcast Force Awakens reaction you need. So before we jump into that, I want to thank everyone who's sponsoring and supporting this very program. All of our Patreon supporters who are helping us keep the lights on, so to speak, around here. If you want to help support us by throwing in a few shekels towards our efforts online and help us pay for hosting and equipment and all that good stuff. If you get value or entertainment of some kind from this show, head over to patreon.com/StarWarsReport and pitch in a few pennies, and we really do appreciate it. We've got a lot of really cool bonuses for the folks who support us as a way of thanking them. And those of you who do support us already, we salute you. You're making it free for everybody else. You're awesome.
Shelling shingles. We just don't take Imperial credits.
Well, that's true. That's true. Republic credits are no good out here. I need something for you. But yeah, let's talk about it. There's what's interesting about The Force Awakens is that the first phrase we hear in the very first teaser trailer last Thanksgiving is the ominous voice of Andy Serkis saying,
"There's been an awakening. Have you felt it?"
At least that's my best. That's my best. I need some help in the audio department to pitch that on down. But that's what we hear. And what's interesting is that's really been a big question mark going into the film of what is it? It's called The Force Awakens. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what does that mean. And now on the other side of five viewings, as I record this, I've got to say, I'm not sure I'm very exactly close to a definitive answer. So I took some time to talk about some, or at least some time to listen to a few different reaction shows, which got me to thinking, and that's always a dangerous option right there. But it did get me to thinking. And I want to talk about really specifically two characters that I really identify with the awakening theme throughout the film. The first one being Finn. Because upon the first viewing, I really kind of tied all of the themes of awakening to Rey. But I don't really think that's necessarily fair, especially upon repeated viewings. In my case, for Finn, I think one of the biggest moments of the film is right at the beginning when his friend dies there on the battlefield. That's Finn's change of heart moment. And you don't know anything about him. You can't even see his face at that point, but it's such a pivotal turn point in the film that is, if you look closely, kind of mystical in its presentation. There's a kind of snap zoom in. There's these ghostly audio effects. He seems very confused, as if he was just hit. And it's not just the way it's presented to him. There's a moment where Finn is not necessarily through the Force, but certainly just through his own sense of morality, awakened and to the evil of the First Order, and he realized he can't do this. And we hear it in the trailer, he was raised to do one thing, and he realized that he can't do it. He was raised to do evil, and we don't know why. We don't know his full backstory, but what we do know and what we do see is that that is his moment of awakening, and I really, really like the way that Finn's character is introduced, because if we're honest, Finn is a very kind of comic relief, almost Han Solo type of character throughout the film. But there's a lot more to him than just giving the thumbs up to BB-8. It's a great moment, but there's a lot more to Finn, and that's very much highlighted by his introduction, which is very, very, very serious. In fact, if you look at the film, most of the punchlines are Finn's. Most of the funny moments involve Finn, whether it's, "That's not how the Force works," or whether it's the BB-8 thumbs up, or whether it's, "Yes, I am with the Resistance. That's me. They look like me." You know, like all those moments that when you're in theaters get the laughs, those are there, but they're not there until we really start off on a very serious note. The beginning of the film only has Poe as the deliverer of the humor. How's this work? You talk first, I talk first. And so I think that's I really got to thinking a lot about Finn. Mark, for you, was that something that you noticed right off the bat as far as did you really think of Finn as a part of that awakening motif that the film presented?
Yes and no. When we first see him, we first see that battle coming out and he makes the choice. At that moment, no. But I hadn't read Before the Awakening yet. So, you know, Greg Rucka's book gives you background there. Once I had that, when I watched it on my third time, you know, yeah, I saw it from the beginning. But when I didn't know that, when I watched that first scene, I was kind of like, okay, why is he doing this? And then it explained after the fact where he was going. And everything from that point moving forward made sense. The you know, the moral conflict he was having, his need to make it right. You know, I liked that aspect of it. And he was awakened to the fact that there was a lot more going on. There were horrors, to the First Order. And knowing now, you know, that these guys were basically like Jedi Knights stolen, not really stolen necessarily. We don't know exactly if they're stolen or given or how it worked, but as infants, they were taken and trained as stormtroopers till they were at the age they were. And he was about 18 or so, 19 or so in the film. So it's like, he's been in the midst of all of this all that time. And it was really hard to get that sense of the confliction he had when he came down off the ramp. And I think the only thing when I watched it the very first time that would be the only physical proof is Finn is the only stormtrooper character that really seems to be tense. When you watch all the other stormtroopers, they all have necks. Finn, you know, the actor, John's got a long neck. So I got this feeling that he had his shoulders up because he was very tense. He was not comfortable on the battlefield. And he was like the only trooper like that. So much that I was originally thinking that armor doesn't really fit him. But, you know, when I look back on it, each time I'm reflecting a little more, that's the moral conundrum. That's the physical proof right there. He was shoulders up, tense as hell going into that battle. He did not want to shoot anyone. He thought it was wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Bethany, like, when it comes to Finn, did you see that awakening motif that we're kind of talking about in his character upon first viewing?
I did, yes. And I don't think it had anything to do with the Force. But, I do think that what Finn is he's a sanitation worker. He's never been in battle before. And yes, while he's been trained, he is a good person at heart. And when he sees what the rest of the stormtroopers are doing to the villagers, it horrifies him. He sees his buddy die, and that's something that's horrible for anybody, trained or not. And then he looks up, and all of a sudden, he's seeing through the eyes of a man who's just seen death up close and personal in a violent way for the first time. He's seeing what's happening through new eyes. And those eyes, if we can borrow from Maz Kanata a bit, they're, I mean, it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing, and it's expressed in his horror, which is visible all over his body, even though he's wearing an entire stormtrooper suit.
No, absolutely. And what's interesting, well, what's more interesting about, oh, sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was going to say, think about, too, when he's with Rey and she turns the ship to go back to Jakku and the absolute panic he has. I mean, you know, when Maz, you know, we're talking about Maz, talking about his eyes. You're the man who wants to run. When she takes him back, he is freaking out. He knows exactly what the First Order will do if they get their hands on him, especially, you know, and then later when they're at Maz, he's ready to bail on Rey because he's so terrified because he knows just how bad they really are.
No, absolutely. And here's the thing about his awakening is the fact that he's awakened to the fact that that one thing he was raised to do was evil. And that may not be as blatantly honest, or maybe not honest, but more, it may not be as blatantly obvious to just a sanitation worker. It's like, oh, there's a nice big construction project here. A lot of jobs being created here with the First Order. Wait, is that a giant multi-system planet destroying super laser? It's a lot of jobs though. It's we're all good. We're all fine here. How are you?
And I feel did you see Pablo had confirmed some stuff about that it actually did move and that it did absorb energy from a sun before it got to that system. And the the blast goes out, it's drawn to the gravity wells. I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
Well, and I didn't see this Pablo say anything about it. I remember hearing somewhere from some blog I was reading or some kind of information, I think from the visual guide or something, where in the plot of the film, the super laser was already charged when it destroys the Hosnian system. Which, again, it's a small thing, but there are a lot of like small editing choices that I really think would have helped with the flow of this film. Of instead of waiting until the second time to show us that how the laser works and sucks up energy. It would have been very good if they'd shown something along the lines of it sucking up a star from the, from another system so we could get to see and understand how it works beforehand. It's a small quibble, but I think it's one that,
Here's one I caught from the visual dictionary. One of those planets that we saw destroyed, they mentioned that Leia had an aide that was sent to the planet.
Yep.
What it also mentions is the Chancellor is on that planet.
He's the dude. The Republic's
he's the whipped looking guy, the Bothan looking dude. Yeah, he is the Chancellor.
I believe.
So we witnessed the First Order assassinate the New Republic's Chancellor. I was like blown away.
Yeah.
I just caught it in the visual dictionary. I was like, what? That is huge. How did that just like? There's no a telegraph blast from the New Republic condemning the actions or anything. Like, I was wow, that was so subtle.
There was such a fervent need to avoid any sort of political gibberish such a fear of that from, I think, what some of the biggest digs on the prequels where the film suffers, because if you know that you kind of get a sense for it generally from the Hux speech. That's really the only time you learn anything about the New Republic and how it works. But you don't know that the capital goes from system to system. You don't know that that's the Chancellor, the ruler of the Republic, which is kind of compromised and worked with the First Order while at the same time under the table supporting the Resistance. You don't really figure any of this out unless you look at the extraneous material. That's probably the biggest, or at least one of the biggest weaknesses of the film. But I don't, fortunately, that's it, because that's not terrible, because as a big, big fan like we are, we can read the visual guide and learn all the stuff. And when we go back for our sixth viewing, like, oh, look at the fuzzy face. President Fuzzy Face is dying. Like, we can figure out, like, who these people are. But it's still enough.
May I make a statement, though?
It's still enough for casual viewers. You're going to say?
They do show us in the crawl. They give us the very basic outline of it. But that crawl, pun intended, kind of crawls over everybody's heads, because as Star Wars fans, we are so excited to see the film that the first line is Luke Skywalker has vanished.
I feel like,
and all Star Wars fans are like, oh,
that's like the only thing we'll remember at all.
And then you just forget about the entire rest of the crawl. You're like, there's something Republic, something First Order, evil bad guys.
It's you're reminding me of the Family Guy bit where it's like Lord Vader exposition, exposition, exposition. It's sort of like Luke Skywalker has vanished, exposition, exposition,
exactly,
exposition.
Exactly.
Well, she's right, because I saw that and I totally, the first viewing, had missed the whole aspect of Leia Organa, leading. And then when I read it the second time after watching, I was like, oh yeah, it does talk about how she's leading all this thing. Like, you really get that sense that, like, for the first time, Leia is it. Like, she is the number one person, or a better way to put it is she is almost Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi, where the Empire is looking for Luke. In this case, they're looking, to shut her down because she's the big threat. Although Luke is also a threat because he's a Jedi, but it's like, attached to that sister is that brother. We gotta take these guys down.
Yep. It's so true. It's so true. Well, folks, we're going to take a brief time out. Riley's going to go grab some water and probably some hot chocolate. And then we're going to talk about the true central theme of Awakening for this film. And that's the character of Rey right after this. Thank you. That's actually pretty cool. Someone put together a full medley of Rey's theme, which really does appear throughout the film a whole lot. She is the central character. Like, it doesn't matter if you just listen to the soundtrack and recognize Rey's theme, you know that she is the central character that we're talking about here. But let's talk about it. Rey's Awakening. I guess I'll kick us off again like we did last time and just say that for Rey, it's very rapid. To the point that it's still difficult for me to reconcile fully, but I think it's intentional. In rapid succession, she is awakened specifically in the Force. That's probably what's most distinctive between her and someone like Finn, where she's awakened in the Force by the physical contact of Luke's lightsaber. That's when everything changed. We get some hints of Force sensitivity, and she's a great pilot and all that stuff, but once she has that Force vision, there is an extremely rapid time of awakening where she has that contact with Luke's lightsaber, and then within rapid succession, she's captured by Kylo Ren, and Kylo attempts to his little Force mind attack, which totally backfires, almost comically, actually, after looking at it a few times. And then that's like where the momentum hits. Like, there's a 15-minute window of this film where she fights back at Kylo Ren, defeats him at his own game, using Force abilities she's never even tested before. And then, as he kind of says in the dialogue of the film, she keeps testing her newfound abilities even more when she mind tricks 007 there, the trooper JB 007, as this trooper was nicknamed, which I think is in the actual visual dictionary. And finally, she actually eventually, and this is the crux of the film, like the actual tension moment, In A New Hope, it's whether or not Luke is going to blow up the Death Star. Here, that tension is not whether or not, Starkiller Base is going to be destroyed. The real tension of the film is found when her awakening is fulfilled, when she faces Kylo Ren and embraces the Force. When he says, "You need a teacher!" Which, but it's funny. Yeah. His delivery of that line's great. And that really opens the floodgates, of the Force power. It's kind of funny, weirdly and perversely, Kylo is the instigator of her embracing her Force powers against his wishes. And what's interesting about Rey's full awakening is that, unlike Luke, she has raised herself through adolescence. And that's an interesting aspect of this whole thing. But I think that's her awakening in the Force is right at the tension of the midpoint of the film, when she answers the calling in the true form and fashion of Joseph Campbell, and at the climax of the film, when she embraces her destiny and says the Force, and then fights back.
That is the... If you think about it, each time that Rey is at a major disadvantage is when she's unfamiliar with the Force, meaning that when she's first exposed to Kylo Ren reaching into her mind, which is a brand new thing, and she's terrified of him, that entire experience terrifies her, and there's no way she could even consciously at this point concentrate on using the Force against him, because not only is she inexperienced, but she's in an emotional state of turbulence, which, as we see later, really hurts Kylo Ren. As soon as he realizes that she is Force sensitive the second time that he enters her mind, that completely throws him for a loop. And I don't think she defeats him there. She thwarts him, and he, in shock, immediately steps back like, "Wait, what is this?"
He kind of does, though, sulk off like a defeated puppy, let's be honest.
Well, and that's because this is the first real challenge he's had, perhaps in years. You know, he strides around like, you know, nothing ever, nothing messes with him, even though he's so...
Adam Driver needs to do an SNL skit with him just walking around and humming his own theme. Bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum. Or the Imperial March, and then you'd stride along like in step. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, it's true. But Mark, talk a little bit about Rey awakening.
Well, okay, so you know, I was the one mentioning that unlike Luke, she was, you know, raising herself through her adolescence, her older part of it anyway. I think that explains a lot of her rapid success with the Force. When you add to that, that Han told her that all the stories were true, all of it. Okay, so she had faith then in Jedi mind tricks, you know, because Han told her it's all true. She now at this point has no reason to disbelieve. So in that moment, when she does it, she just, you know, she's able to give to that. So I think that those kind of things help add to why she was able to quickly awaken. Also, as well, I think there's that Skywalker theory. I think that she's Luke's kid. I may be wrong, but that's what I'm thinking right now. But I don't know. I mean, I think you're onto something in the aspect of when Ren confronts her and she has that moment where it's like the light is awoke to her. So that's, she's the light that Snoke talks about. But I think that at the end, when Kylo kills his father, that act is the awakening of the dark that Snoke talks about as well. So by the time this film is over, we do see the awakening in the light and the dark, but it's Kylo that is the dark side being awoken. And it's because of that moment he has with Rey where he awakens the light in her, it shakes something in him and he realizes he has to extinguish the last of the light inside himself. There is someone else out there who has fully embraced the light right now, and he is petrified of that. I mean, think about this. His mentor, or his role model at this point is Darth Vader, who was brought back to the light by Luke Skywalker, someone that was affixed in the light. So if you're already feeling like you've got a shred of the light in you, Rey is a big threat to you right now. You do not want her to infect or, you know, coerce the light inside you where it ends up taking you over and be seduced by the light, as Snoke puts it. So I truly think that by the end, when we see Kylo kill his father, that too is another one of the awakenings. And I'll also point out too, that I think we also have an awakening in Han, that by the time this whole thing's open over, he's awakened to the fact that he has to return to the fight. He has to come back to the fold. He can't run anymore. And I thought that that was an interesting awakening moment as well, because that was one of the things as I was watching the film too, was like, you know, trying to pick up on all the awakening moments, like, oh, okay, here we are, you know. And you were talking earlier, Riley, about the editing choices. And I think about, you know, the Maz angle, you know, where she was originally supposed to give the lightsaber to Leia at the base and stuff, but they decided to cut all that out. I mean, there's definitely some editing things that have created some of the little hiccups and stuff.
I think so.
But it's one of those aspects, like, the more you go back and the more you try to figure things out, the more that this show is just providing. There's more depth every time you go.
No, absolutely. That's the one thing, that, again, kind of circling back to the editing. I think there's a lot we're going to learn about this.
I wonder,
as we see, like, the special edition.
I do wonder if Maz Kanata is perhaps more involved in some of these awakenings, perhaps, because she seems to have her fingers in a lot of pie. So picture she knows without turning around that Han Solo has arrived. You know, she stops.
That's true.
Pauses a second, yells Han's name, and then turns around.
Han
and she has Luke's lightsaber. She's the one who tries really hard to convince Rey to take the lightsaber and take her first steps as a Jedi. She's the one who's telling Han, and you know what, Han? You've stayed out of this fight too long. You are going to get involved again. And she's who, after a close inspection of Finn, is saddened to discover the fact that he does truly just want to run, and she's still willing to help him run. But if you think about it, and we know from the trailer, she seems to know Leia as well. So, who is this Maz?
Is this Han?
Well, Bethany, you also pointed out something that just gave me an epiphany. When she's trying to take and talk Rey into taking Luke's lightsaber, she talks about when you close your eyes, you can feel the light. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what Rey does when she's on the edge of the precipice, when they are on Starkiller. The ground opens up and she's on the edge of it. She's backed up against the wall, so to speak, and they're locked. You know, Ripazay, they got their saber to saber. She can't do anything else. And she closes her eyes and she gets that center moment. And I mean, for me, like, the EU side of my fandom was like, it's the Koran horn. I've embraced my death moment. She's going to become Superman. Yes. But I didn't put together that, though, that it was Maz that gave her that instruction.
Sure was.
It was indeed.
Yeah. I think Maz Kanata is one of the ones that we lost a bit on the editing room, on the cutting room floor. And I think we're going to learn a lot more about her in the future.
And I want to. This is funny. I'm going to tell William Devereaux from the Ion Cannon podcast to come listen to this because he did not like Maz in his first few viewings. So I'm going to ask him again if after his 11th viewing of the movie.
He's been 11 times.
I'm going to ask him again because I'm going to have to duck out in just a minute here, guys, to go record with him on Ion Cannon.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm actually going to ask him what he thinks of Maz and maybe bring this up and see what he thinks.
That actually works well because we're going to transition to some listener feedback here as well. So that actually works pretty well.
That was almost planned.
I know. It's like it worked out well.
Okay. Well, I shall take my leave then.
All right, it was good.
A lot of fun. And
I'm
going to
talk about how expectations are the devil.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
All right, Bethany, we'll see you. We'll see you guys. We'll see you soon and have fun over there on Ion Cannon. Be sure to check them out. They are a part of the Second Airborne Division. So make sure you check out the Ion Cannon podcast. And William, who's seen it 11 times. Good grief.
All batteries fire, fire, fire.
All batteries fire.
Okay, well.
The shield is down.
May the force be with you.
Can you imagine if all the Nemoidians sounded like that one dude from episode 3? Instead of like, it would be something along the lines of,
as you know, our blockade is perfectly legal. All batteries fire.
There are two of them.
We're
in trouble now. That would be bad. Because, you know, I don't know. The Moidians had a slimy feel to them, even though they weren't really slimy. There was just something about the way that they hunched over and kind of had their hands up, kind of all...
Absolutely. I wrote this note, I think for our first reaction episode, we never got to it. And it's just one bullet point that I'll read to you verbatim, Mark, and it's, expectations are the devil. I swear I'll never read another spoiler overanalyzed publicity material again. And I was kind of in a mood when I wrote it. I don't know that I would characterize it that strongly again, but man, for Rogue One, for episode 8, I don't think... See, and this is the problem with doing something like Star Wars Tonight, is that it really, it was really been, good.
What
bad.
If the movie's bad?
Mm-hmm. What if, yeah.
I had to sneak back on for a second.
I did say that at my first two viewings, right before it went Lucasfilm. I'm like, what if it sucks?
You're like the fanboys, maybe. But yeah, what's fun, I think that going into future Star Wars films, I will consciously probably try to take out maybe 20 to 30% of the publicity material that I was consuming, particularly blog posts and think pieces beforehand. And maybe not so many TV spots, because there are a couple of great moments in the film that were in TV spots that I would have rather just have seen for the first time in the context of the film. I think that's really the one time I went over what I kind of personally would have, at least in hindsight, is maybe cut out those TV spots and international trailers. That may have been something that I would avoid.
It's so hard, though, man. That stuff is Star Wars crack. I mean, they visually, you know, there's no injection, snorting, smoking. It goes right in through your eyes, and you're like, ears, and you're like, I can't get it out. I need more. It's weird because, like, okay, you know, you say expectations are the devil, and I come from it as preconceived notions are the devil, because it's the same thing, I think. You know, every time you go into something with those notions, and that's where with my dad, I'm so worried because he's went to those sites. He has all these negative ways of looking at things that are going to come in the movie. So I'm like, I want to share the experience with him, but yeah, I'm with you in that regard of it may be a mistake, but I, at this point, I feel like I owe it to my dad to take him, even if it is a mistake, because I brought him into the EU with the New Jedi Order, got him hooked on those books. He's read all of the EU books.
Well,
that's what it takes, but he's not reading much of the canon. He's kind of taking a step back.
All I want you to do, Mark, is report back and tell me if I'm right and if you regret it. No, I'm kidding.
Why did I ever listen to you, Riley? My dad disowned me.
All right, well, we've got a voicemail here from Stuffity, a longtime listener and actually one of our patron supporters, who sent us in a voicemail, I think, like right after his first viewing. And so it's been sitting in the wings here. Let's take a listen to Mark, a.k.a. Stuffity.
Guys, this is Mark here, otherwise known as Stuffity Online and in various places. just sending this in for my non-spoilery reaction to Force Awakens. Oh man, it was amazing to have that exhilarating feeling of seeing the Lucasfilm logo come up. Oh, and watching that crawl and not knowing what was going to happen. Even 10 years ago, you still had that exhilarating feeling of it's new Star Wars, but you had the feeling of this is the last time it's going to happen. And it's great to just, I was at the same cinema, same time of night, doing the same thing. When the opening crawl finished, my wife had to lean over to me and tell me to let go of her hand because I was hurting her because I was squeezing her hand so tightly. I was so excited. My gosh. I'm trying to give feelings only reaction. Oh, so many feelings. I'm sure there'll be stuff that people will pick apart. I had stuff that I could pick apart, but I won't talk about right now. And I'm waiting to see it a second time because I need to absorb it a bit better. My best thing that I could say about the movie is that at the end of the movie, I realized I had not touched any food. I hadn't opened my packet of M&Ms and I barely sipped at my Coke because I was just intently watching the entire thing. Oh.
See, that's how you know it was engrossing because I'm telling you, man, I would have eaten every last one of those M&Ms.
it was great. And I saw someone, I can't remember who said it, but someone that was at the premiere tweeted and said that you'll laugh more than you expect and you'll cry more than you expect. And yeah, that's pretty much spot on. I had a friend with me that said he's never cried in a movie in his life. And it's the first movie he's ever cried in. I can't wait for the next one. I'm glad we've got so much to that we can consume between movies because I want to know what happens. I know that's all I can say. And if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say. And I hope Steve's going to be involved in this conversation. I want to hear what he has to say.
Oh, yes.
With you guys, because that's always a fun conversation. I hope you guys have fun. Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye, man. Thanks for calling in. That was awesome. I loved to actually get an actual voice on the spot
yeah. Reaction. Nice. You could hear the feels in his voice before he even said it. But I just want to say, I went with my family, and I'm very glad I did. But I didn't get to go with any of my friends yet. When I went with my dad, I was going to bring one of my old coworkers down with me. We were going to go watch it because he's also a Star Wars fan. But you mentioned your friend crying and he's never cried in a theater before. And, you know, it's interesting to me because I'm a father with two girls. And when I'm at home watching shows with my wife and stuff like Grey's Anatomy, I cannot get through very many episodes of Grey's Anatomy without breaking down at some point. I start empathizing with crap and to the point where I'm just like, it's so sad. Like we were watching one episode where it just showed flashbacks of Meredith Grey's, you know, heart trauma moments. And I'm like, oh man, just seeing that's enough to get me kind of going. But to have a friend go with you and have that great heartwarming kind of moment. I just think that's a really cool experience. And, you know, right now we're seeing so many different reactions coming back from this film, you know, where I think I feel like we here at Star Wars Report, we've been blessed with our reaction of it. You know, we've all genuinely came back, you know, really enjoying it. But we were talking beforehand, before we started this recording, you know, my old roommate, he has always been just the original trilogy fan. He's never liked the prequel trilogy. And I was kind of on the fence wondering if he was going to like it or hate it. But I did get to talk to him and he didn't like it. And it was just one of those things. It was like really sad because once he was telling me that and as we started to talk, it was clear that like, that's just another of the Star Wars topics that I cannot talk with him because he's just going to become so negative on it that I'm like, oh man, like I get their ups and downs, but Because my first prequel trilogy, when I went and saw episode one, I went with a bunch of my roommates, and it was like that, where they all came away hating it, and I was the only one loving it. And I was just like, man, that bums me. So I was glad I got to go with my wife and stuff, because my wife is my best friend. So to have that moment with her and to share, it was the same thing. I looked over, and she was looking at me, and I was like, you know, all brimming up, holding onto the chair, leaning at the front edge of the seat the whole time. Couldn't drink my soda, because I was afraid my bladder would burst on me at the last incredibly important moment. You know, I mean, that tends to happen every time I drink a soda in the theater. So, I mean, I think you're blessed in that regard to have somebody there that was able to get the same feelings out of it that you got, because that's something that can be special for people, especially with their friendships.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's such an important experience, especially. I mean, I'll just put it this way. It is so important who you decide to go see one of these films with. That's something I never really thought about going into it, to be honest. But it's a very important, it's a special, unique experience as a Star Wars fan for something that means so much to you, that the first time you see one of these films is very important. That's why I'm still very torn if, like, I mean, the opportunity didn't show up for us this time, but, you know, if it ever came up, whether or not I'd go to a press screening, I don't know that I could do it. It just depends on who would be there or what the environment would be like. But it matters. It matters who you want to choose to spend that special experience with. It's something that I'll definitely, you know, being in careful consideration for future Star Wars films. And I'm so glad. It sounds like Mark, aka Stuffity, you had a great first experience too. And man, here's to many more. We've got another email. It's from Joe. Let's see here. He just said, I wanted to thank you and all of the work you've done on the podcast this past several years. I've listened since Disney announced the purchase of Lucasfilm. You've all been so nice to answer my emails in the past. My son and little brother are so amazed when I talked about you like you're my friends, but that's exactly what all of you have become over the past few years. Well, thanks, Joe. He says, I walk my dog twice a day, listen to you and many other Star Wars podcasts, and emailed you in the past, and and you guys have revived my love for these movies. When I listen to these shows, I feel like I'm part of the conversation. Just wanted to say thank you again. I hope to meet you all at some future Star Wars event. Me, 44, my son, 22, brother, 26, and one of our family friends, 30, recently enjoyed The Force Awakens. We spent the last 6 months watching episodes 1 through 6 as a group, and this journey ended with a great time in the theater in Indianapolis. We love the movie and cannot wait to see where all of this goes. Joe. Well, thanks, Joe. That's awesome. I am so honored just to be any small part of anyone's journey like that. That's really, really cool. And that's what I absolutely love about podcasting.
Yeah. And that's cool too, that your son and your brother are so close, 4 years in age, have an uncle 4 years older. That must make for a very tight family circle for you guys. That's pretty cool.
And I love the fact that they like watched all the films leading into it. I think that we'll have to do that before each, especially before each, episodic film for sure. I think before episode 8, we'll have to do some kind of special, cause I know we did the original trilogy, leading into The Force Awakens. So there we go. And we watched Return of the Jedi.
I couldn't think of doing the 7 movies all at once. Like William Devereaux. I'm just like, I don't know. Plus 11 other viewings. Like, wow, your backside's got to be sore, man. I don't know. I couldn't do that all in one day. Like, unless they allow me to like pace around the theater while I'm watching it, maybe.
That's so true. That's so true. Wow. Well, man, this has been an absolutely incredible experience. And just this whole, now that we've kind of, I feel like, had our time for that initial fallout of the film, now that we're kind of at the end of January, we're kind of transitioning towards looking to the future a little bit more. And I feel like we're just now to that point of processing that you really just have to get to eventually. And it's been a unique experience. It's been an unexpected experience. I've learned a whole lot as a Star Wars fan, just experiencing this type of excitement and going to see a Star Wars movie in theaters for the first time ever. I mean, that's it. For the first time. In forever. Yes! Got it.
You beat me to it.
Thus concludes another episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys, and thank you so much for being a part of the show with us. You can reach us. Make sure you interact with us between shows. Hit us up. It's StarWarsReport@gmail.com to email us. You can leave us a voicemail or whatever you choose to do there as a way of contact, as well as Facebook and Twitter. It's just at Star Wars Report or Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Riley Guy. Bethany is at Bethany L. Blanton. Mr. Herleman's at Illogical Rogue 2. And thanks to everybody again supporting us on Patreon. You can do so at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Folks, we're done. We'll see you next week as we continue our journey through Star Wars fandom here at the Star Wars Report podcast. May the Force be with you. And many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. The Star Wars Report podcast is a part of the 2nd Airborne Division Network of Star Wars podcasts and a part of StarWarsReport.com. You can go to StarWarsReport.com and check out all of the content we have available there for you and your listening pleasure. We thank everyone once again for listening to episode 206 of the Star Wars Report podcast. I think I got it right. Oh man, it's been an absolutely epic journey, and again, huge thanks to everyone who's been a part of it with us. We'll see you guys next week. So long. I just got into it too much. I didn't want to stop it.
I was getting into the chat. We were talking about people screaming at that moment.
And, yeah.
It was quiet. My wife was the only one. And she's like, what? Oh, my God. No. It was like everyone else is holding their breath. I'm like, dude, everybody under you.
That's so true. All right. Well, let me stop the recorder here. There we go.